allows people who may not have had any business training, who may have been felt desperate and left out in the world, to come in, have a systemized way of learning to be salespeople, and also having their poetry, their stories, and their photography. We'll give a little bit of a teaser this morning to the preview of Hope in Shadows, a publication going to be coming out, and some awards that are going to be given at the beginning of May. Our other guest is Bianca. Bianca is one of the staff members at Megaphone, one of those people who energetically, lovingly helps plan events and helps people who have become salespeople feel nurtured and involved, welcome. So without further ado, I'm going to let James start and we will go from there. Oh, before that, my grandmother found an envelope that my grandmother wrote, sending a letter to her mother, and she said, "Lord, this child talks so much." So that would be me. But I want to acknowledge that our work takes place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. We also endeavor to involve people from Indigenous nations in our work here at CJS and encourage us to do likewise. So now, James.
What would you like me to say?
Oh, you can introduce yourself and your work.
Okay, so my name is James Witwicky. I've been working with Megaphone Magazine and the Hope and Shadows Calendar Project since 2010. I actually had a couple of pictures that were in the calendar in 2011 and 2012. But today we're talking about the Voices of the Street project. So since 2011, the same people that have been putting together Megaphone Magazine have published an annual literary anthology. So it's not exclusively poems, but it can also be prose. And they also use some photographs from the Hope and Shadows project in the early days. So I've been involved in this project since 2010. In 2010, I took a picture of a picture for the Hope and Shadows project. We use those little point-and-shoot cameras. That was one of the top 40 pictures of that year. And we had a launch, and then we had an exhibit, and it was really a place to feel that people were noticing you and caring for you and supporting you. At that time, I was right in the middle of a bipolar affective disorder. I didn't receive a diagnosis until 2012. Mm-hmm. There was just tremendous support from Megaphone and Hope and Shadows. And then the folks at Megaphone, that would be Sean Condon and Kevin Hollett, also told me that they accepted poetry. So I began in 2010 submitting poetry to Megaphone Magazine, and some of those poems have been published in the Voices of the Anthologies, which have come out every year since then.
And then again, for people who might not have heard us at the beginning of the month, tell us a little bit about the unique way that writers are involved in selling or earning an income with the publications.
Yeah, so it's there's kind of a blurred region between what is a Megaphone vendor, but the traditional vendor are people that need income, that come from low income background, that need to be supported in an activity that they can do on their own time and at their own pace. And so Megaphone has been really great over the years in maintaining a group of maybe 150 to 200 Megaphone vendors that are just basically on the street selling the Megaphone magazine, which is $2 plus a tip if you want, the Voices of the Street anthology, which is $10, and the Hope and Shadows, well, this year it'll be $15, and the Hope and Bianca's making faces at me, so the Hope and Shadows calendar, which is $20. So the impetus all along has been to create quality products that the vendors can use to make income. For example, the Megaphone magazine, they buy it for 70 cents. They pay up front, and then they sell it for $2 or $2 plus a tip, and can make a bit of a decent living, and support their income doing that. Over the years, there's been there's been a growth in the products. The Voice of the Street, the Voice of the Street has always been really good, but the Megaphone magazine is a really good 32-page magazine. I'm also the copy editor for Megaphone magazine. We have the Shift Peer Newsroom, which is all made up of people that at one time or another have been active vendors, and now they may be making a transition to doing more literary kind of work, and we get paid for that as well. So it's just been a great program for just developing people, having people that maybe still struggling with mental illness, having them come into a comfortable space, a safe space. We have a monthly Megaphone vendor meeting, and at the beginning of that meeting there's a list of things that we're asked to do and not to do during the meeting, which has been very simple, very successful over the years.
Sounds like a dream. The kind of things that people say, somebody should have something like this, but you hear that you're actually doing it. Tell me a little bit more about the Shift.
Okay, so the Shift Newsroom was basically the brainchild. Our managing editor and project coordinator, Paul, has a background in community newspapers, and she's done amazing work over the last 30 or 40 years. And so she came up with this idea, I think it was in 2022, I'm not sure exactly, but she came up with this idea of recruiting the people that had, over the years, like a lot of us have submitted material to Megaphone, been printed, some of us have submitted poems, but she got this idea that if she could really bring us all together in the same room, that it would be a great way to have articles contributed by people that have this lived experience, that have been vendors, that live in the neighborhood, that may have struggles with their income. And it's been with a lot of us. I've had three things published, a poem and two stories. A lot of people have published a couple of times. And then around that, she builds, Paula, that is, the contributing writers that are a small group of really excellent professional writers that are doing it full time. And so Paula recruits from them the main stories, and then around those main stories, she sets our contributions into that. And it's like smaller, shorter. We have access to photographers. So in my last story, they sent a photographer out. And it's really just like it ends up with giving us an opportunity to have a really professional and impactful contribution that also reflects what's going on in the community.
Yes. Bianca, tell us about how you're involved with both. You're involved with both Megaphone and the newsroom.
So I do the fundraising and communications, and James is correct. And Paula came up with the newsroom idea in 22, and it came to fruition in 2023. And so my role is to push the newsroom to as large of an audience as possible, because with everything happening in journalism right now, it's rare to see a group of really hardworking, incredible, thoughtful, trained journalists in a room together pitching ideas and then going through with them, creating timelines to when they're going to be published, who they need to interview, what needs to happen, and making sure simultaneously that everybody is paid an industry standard payment for their work. And so I support Paula in kind of outsourcing and showing what the newsroom does. So whether that's through campaigns, as our pre-winter campaign actually was all about fundraising for the newsroom to ensure those payments to our writers and our editor. But yeah, I also really just love the newsroom, aside from my role formally in it. I think it's an incredible space, and Paula has over 30 years of experience in newsrooms. She's been a writer and an editor her whole career, and it was really important for her to emulate what an effective newsroom is, and they do it. I mean, I love sitting in on the newsroom. I love hearing their ideas, and it's incredible. Like, we'll have people go in and take photographs on their phones with people that they've interviewed, whether from Carnegie or, you know, it could be a very, some people are finding their niche of investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible thing to see. And people bring the photos and they bring the edits and they bring, you know, they send Paul all of their copies. And it's a joy to see such an active group of people care about their community in this way.
I think it's a joy and a hope. I also have a degree in journalism and worked in more health publications, but also at some point in Detroit for a street paper. I was so excited when they said, there's a street paper.
Oh, that's lovely.
Because you don't hear them. In Toronto, I did a little, it was something for people to read on the subway, and it had a little happy stomach. And while it was just common and something you could give out to people on or have people buy on the subway, it was fine. But no, I kept moving up and up and up toward the New York Times or Harvard type of newsletter, and the interest went to yours, where things are still bringing forth stories of the city and it's involving people. It gives hope, because that's the main thing people say, oh, newsrooms are dead, nobody, you know, newspapers are dead, people just want these stories. But I think it's so important to have what you have captured, not only just something for writers who might have gone to journalism schools, but people who have stories in them, and people mm-hmm. who have the tenacity to follow up stories, actually working for you and being paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we actually have an agreement with Langara School of Journalism. We have a scholarship with them where we send two members of the newsroom every year to complete some courses at Langara, and so it's just nice that there's a more accessible way for people to have the experience of a post-secondary education if that's what they wish, and having this newsroom. And it's funny, Kevin Hollett was in a meeting with our staff recently, and he said, you know, it's funny, when we first started Megaphone, we were so concerned, we had 24 hours and we had all these physical newspapers, and now print is hard to find.
Yes.
And now it's a really unfortunate landscape, but Megaphone manages to persist. For sure.
And I think that's, excuse me, that's very helpful and encouraging. I want to say what you're listening to this morning. This is SF Radio, the Saluau Show. I'm Charlotte Farrell, Sister Seed, your host. And it's called Saluau because my guest and I speak up so you can listen and act on what you hear. James, would you share with us some of your, I know you have some poetry to share, and I've heard that you are an impeccable.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I wanted to preface this by saying that, you know, we have a lot of people that are going to journalism school, and there's a couple of other programs where people are allowed to do some enrichment. So I came from a different kind of background, because I already got my degree in English from UBC in 1985, and then I had a complete breakdown. Within 3 years of having my degree, I was homeless and living on welfare. So when I came back to myself in the 2012 and beyond that, as I recovered from mental illness, this was just been a great thing for me to participate in. And you know, I don't do a ton of writing, but I write for the Voice of the Street every year, and this is one of the pieces that we had. Our theme was bread and roses and safe supply, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you know about previously the slogan bread, give us bread and roses. Well, there was a poster that somebody had made and hung it on the fence at Oppenheimer Park, bread and roses and safe supply. And so that became the theme of this year's Voices of the Street. So this one is called Thinking of You. Bread and roses and safe supply make me think of you as I ought to do. The good and the harm and the beauty too. The blood red life sustaining you. The beauty too. The red, red rose of your beating heart. And the life in you and then life apart. The bad things that cause your life to fade. The violent, the things we hate. Bread and roses and safe supply make me think of you, and I wonder why you can't have the things you need. Why plant a hopeful seed and stop being spectators as you bleed, and your loved ones cry with a silent scream, and the powerful pray and the wish that things won't continue on like this. bread and roses and safe supply make me think of you, and I wonder why the numbers need to be so high, and why we don't think as we did before that prohibition just opens up death's door. With you in the sights of this drug war and the worst of the worst rich, and why no bread, no roses, no safe supply.
That is when you see people who give lip service to something being done, but when they talk about having a safe supply in their neighborhood, it's like, no, not my neighborhood. You know. So how do you think poetry like that might have an impact on people who are listening to council meetings or whatever, where they're making decisions about locations for safe supply?
It's funny, I was actually just discussing this with my coworker an hour ago. We at Megaphone get really, frustrated because we know the effectiveness of a safe injection site and how safe supply is. It's not even just mandatory. It has to happen. It's how we are supposed going to heal. And, you know, I think there's so much misinformation, so much stigma with safe supply. Safe supply in general. A common one I see is people really feel like safe injection sites provide drug users with drugs, which is not how they operate at all. And so when I hear poetry like this and we publish it, you know, we're printing over 2,000 copies this year, it gives me a real sense of hope that people will read it and people will feel it, and maybe it will be that push that makes them look into what is actually happening. Why do these operate the way they do? What are the actual statistics? I have to hope. I have to yes. hope when I hear poetry yes. like that, that people will read it and have a need to understand where it comes from and why it's so important.
Aside from encounters with vendors, the book, are there any where you have spoken poetry, you have meetings or things where the public can hear the poetry?
Well, yeah, we do have a launch every year at SFU Woodward. Mm-hmm. And so there will be a launch, I think it's the 17th.
It is the 17th of May from 6 to 8 p.m. At 149 West Hastings, and it's at the World Center for the Arts building at SFU. Tickets are $12. You can find them anywhere you can find Megaphone online. We have a launch. We'll have eight writers reading their work, and then we actually have two peer photographers who did all the photography for Voices of the Street this year, and they will also be discussing in a panel type setting what that process was like for them. But we also actually participate in Heart of the City Festival, and if you don't know what Heart of the City Festival is, listeners, it is an annual festival that takes place primarily in the downtown east side, if not all in the downtown east side. And most events are free and are based in the arts. Anything that's been published or painted or created, there's usually documentaries, or for us, we have a poetry reading, and it's more poetry from Voices of the Street.
Okay. Now, Peggy just got her pin.
Okay.
So I want you to say again the event that's happening, date in May, and then also your website, where people could go to the website to get more information.
Yeah, our website. So the event is May 17th, Friday, from 6 to 8 at 149 Hastings, the World Center for the Arts building at SFU Woodward's. And our website, actually, we just completely redid it. It's megaphonemagazine.com.
What's spelled that?
It's M-E-G-A-P-H-O-N-E. How do you spell magazine?
M-A-G-A-Z-I-N-E dot C-O-M.
Beautiful.
Okay.
I will make a codicil that Megaphone has not a lot of the literary material on the website, because we're encouraging people to find a vendor.
Right.
So that's one thing. It's not, you would expect to find on a newspaper.
Yes, we do. So the big change in the website actually was we put our newsroom on the website. And so what that means is articles that have been published for up to 4 months prior. So you would not read any articles that have been published in the last 4 months, because that way it still promotes sales for vendors. Mm-hmm. If they want to sell reissues, we have a 3 month, I don't want to say rule, but we keep 3 months worth of back issues for vendors to keep. So once those 3 months are up, we're going to every now and then throw some really interesting articles from the Peer Newsroom. And again, that's just to make it even more accessible for people who may not live here, may not be able to. So our website is very exciting. And you can actually also find us on Instagram at Megaphone Mag. And that also has a direct link to tickets for Voices of the Street. Good.
What is the cost for Voices? Voices of the Street is the publication.
Yes.
But the event that's happening on the 17th is free?
So the event is $12 because we are serving food as well. But we are also actually this year doing a donate a ticket option. So people, if they have the ability to pay for a community member's ticket, they can do so. And that way we can offer free tickets to those who are facing income barriers.
Well, that's brilliant.
Thanks.
And there is an honorarium as well.
Mm-hmm. Readers get paid for rehearsal, event, and for a speaking workshop that we provide.
Oh yeah, and so we have access to some of the greatest poets. Fiona Tinway Lamb, R.C. Slowski is a great friend of the spoken word, and this year Jim Sands. So these are people that are like the type of people that will put on poetry events. I was at another event at the Heart of the City Festival curated by Jim Sands about reading forbidden poetry. So we spoke for 10 minutes and then read a piece of poetry. In my case, it was a friend of Bianca's, a professor who had written this poem against the pipeline.
Well, that's brilliant. It has so many things that people say, wouldn't it be nice if? So yes, it's happening at.
Yes, yeah.
Can people, say someone might be new to the area or might just be new to listening to our station and hearing this broadcast, if someone wanted to connect with you, is there a way of connecting with, how would they, let's say it's a person that's had this writing experience, excuse me.
Yeah, the Megaphone has always, so I've been involved with for 14 years, Megaphone has always accepted submissions. So I met Sean Condon in the lobby upstairs today, and I used to just go in with a piece, like a page torn out of your notebook there, and just say, here, and they would, and then maybe 3 months later or something, they would say, okay, James, the poem's coming out. So now Paula's a little bit more proactive than that, but I've always accepted submissions from people in the community. And to be a vendor, they just come, well, Bianca can tell you, but they just come and on a particular day or make an appointment with Devin and do the vendor training, which is very straightforward.
Yes, when I was listening and looking at diagrams, I said, it's like a Harvard Business School approach. But for many racialized minorities or others, the pathway is not so easy. You know, I had the experience when I first was looking for work in Toronto, and I had a lot of writing experience. I've written since I was, Lord, this child talks so much. I hadn't since I was a little kid, because my grandmother, when she had a day that she would pull the chair up, and I knew when she pulled the chair up on that day, she was going to be writing, and she gave me a little square of paper to write something in. And then I saw in one of her letters to my mom, I sent Charlotte outside to play, because she gave me so many pieces, I can't seal up the envelope. And she doesn't understand why it costs more than 2 cents. And she's bringing me some pennies to say maybe I could get 2 stamps. But so I really love journalism, and I did work in Detroit Black community newspaper as well as Detroit Tree Fest, but there weren't opportunities. There was always some that didn't fit. When I came here, I wrote a budget meeting, but there weren't really the welcome to write stories of the street. There have been issues that occur within Canadian society all the time, but there's an expectation. Journalism school, here's this. You could write about nutrition, not talk about the food shortage, or not talk about some things. So I think it's great that you have an outlet where people can talk about the issues of the day, and it's especially leading people over the head. I'm leaning away from the mic. But I know that you are concerned at a time when there's so many angry words. Sometimes people let words lead them into hitting each other, that you have been able to have an environment where very sensitive issues happening in, you know, Vancouver and Canada can be discussed without, you know, people hitting each other in the mouth.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, too, is that something that I've been mindful of over the years, and more so as the years go by, is this great audience that Megaphone has. So maybe there's 2,000 to 4,000 people that regularly engaged with the magazine. They love it. They love engaging with the vendors. They seek vendors out. They have usually have their pocket change ready, and now we have an app. But there's that community in Vancouver that is just really so receptive. And so when I'm writing, that's who I think about, who I'm writing to. And we've talked about this before, about not hitting people on the head with stuff and being gentle and being thoughtful in our discussion. And that's where we kind of position ourselves in that the shift or the magazine in general. And I think it is a little bit middle of the road, but it's important stuff that people, that the readers really want to dig into.
Right, yeah, the real news. Did you have another of your poems you'd like to share?
No, I don't think I did. I had this, there was a partial one, but it's not.
Oh, is the other one not there? Do you want to read the partial one?
Well, this was a part with...
I can also pull it up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, see if you can pull it up. I just wanted to say, while we've got a minute too, and we're doing all these public service announcements.
That's fine.
You know, Megaphone is also a member of the International Network of Street Newspapers, INSP, and we get to interact with them sometimes, and they send us material that's published in the magazine, and it's really fantastic, like people from all over the world that are doing the same kind of thing and the same kind of experience of producing a paper like this, producing products like this, which takes like a whole team. The team is larger than any of the products, but it's amazing that they can keep it going. Okay, Crocuses and Grocers.
Do you want that one?
Or the other one, the waiting.
I have What Are We Waiting For?
Waiting,
well.
I like that one.
Okay.
So this one was kind of done. This What Are We Waiting For was kind of done in a workshop, and it was after I had met with Sarah Blythe and done an article magazine about Sarah Blythe and the Overdose Prevention Society. And this kind of popped up in our workshop. What are we waiting for? The list is long, but we are feeling strong, better than the people who are dope sick or dying, and others who are left at midnight crying. We are waiting for politics side and leave robust science to decide how we treat people and the things we provide, whether housing or health care or safe supply. We're waiting for common sense to prevail, for governments, media, and partial observers to act together on what we can agree is true. People are dying. The toxic drug crisis is real. It's time for sane actions to help people heal. We are waiting.
Wow. Sounds like you have some people coming forth. You could open for the second one because, as we said, you are a prolific poet. It's still International Poetry Month, and we've been able to do a lot of special programs, but I think poetry is a way of being able to have people think and feel the issues. It also, I know it is a healing form as well, of being able to bring you back to the parts of you that are hurting, and then send ideas than
yeah.
before.
Yeah, I know. I have a New Living Translation Bible, and in the they have introductions to each of the books. And in the introductions to Psalms, they talk about being able to express that can only be expressed in songs or in poetry.